स्वयं रूप कदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदांतिकं वंदेहं श्रीगुरुः श्रीयुत पदकमलं श्रीगुरुन् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातं सहगण रघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजन सहितं कृष्ण चैतन्य देवं श्री राधा कृष्ण पादां सहगण ललिता श्री विशाखान्वितांश्च नमो ओम विष्णु पादाय कृष्ण प्रेष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्ति वेदांत स्वामिनिति नामिने नमस्ते सारस्वते देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य देश तारिणे मुखं करोति वाचालं पंगुं लंघयते गिरिं यत्कृपातमहं वंदे श्रीगुरुं दीनतारिणं वंशाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्येव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः नमो महावदान्याय कृष्ण प्रेम प्रदायते कृष्णाय कृष्ण चैतन्य नामने गौरतुषे नमः हे कृष्ण करुणा सिंधु दीन बंधो जगतपते गोपेश गोपिका कांत राधा कांत नमोस्तुते तप्त कांचन गौरांगी राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरि प्रिये जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभो नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्णा। We have been talking about the Mahabharat yesterday in brief. We discussed the importance of the Mahabharat, what its significance is for this age in Kali, where people are not in general very qualified to understand the more philosophical and complicated aspects of the Vedic scriptures. The Mahabharata is actually, along with the Srimad Bhagavatam, the two most important scriptures for this age of Kali. As we mentioned yesterday, the Mahabharata is the history of Greater India, which means the planet as a whole. And there used to be just one emperor in those days. And Srila Prabhupada explains that all the other races that exist, whether they are Turks or Greeks, in fact all the Europeans and then subsequently those who became Americans, they all actually originated from there. And they spread out in different directions and they were all originally followers of the Vedic culture. But then, because of geographical separation, somehow or other, they then deviated. And different languages emerged, different cultures emerged, and so on. So, the Mahabharata should not be considered not significant because it contains so many stories and so on. It contains within itself so many nice Vedic instructions. And therefore it is, along with the Puranas, considered as the fifth Veda, Panchama Veda. So it's not any less than the Vedas. Srila Jiva Goswami has explained that the Vedic mantras are as good as the Puranas in the Mahabharata. The only difference is that the Vedic mantras are chanted with the pranav omkar, the om, and it needs some kind of training in order to be able to chant all those mantras properly and to understand their meanings. Whereas the itihasas, that is the histories, like the Srimad Bhagavatam and the other Puranas, and then the Mahabharata, Ramayana, they are relatively easy to understand. And because philosophy is conveyed through the medium of many historical narrations, so it becomes very easy to assimilate for people in this age. Srila Prabhupada explains that the difference between the Mahabharata and the Puranas on one hand, and the Vedic mantras on the other hand, the original Vedas that is like the difference between the Brahmanas and the Parivrajakacharyas. The Brahmanas recite the Vedic mantras because they are trained in that. But the Parivrajakacharyas, the wandering devotees of the Lord who preach, may or may not be expert in chanting of all these mantras, but they understand the essence of the scriptures. And they present the principle of pure devotional service to the Supreme Lord in a way that can be easily understood by the people in general. So this is the Mahabharata. As we also briefly mentioned yesterday, that Krishna is actually the main personality to be understood in the Mahabharata. It's only that different people, having not received knowledge properly in the disciplic succession, misunderstand the Mahabharata, and they actually become more interested in the other topics there, the topics of diplomacy, politics, statecraft, and many, many other things. But actually, in the Mahabharata, it is clear that there is no one equal to or greater than Krishna. It is Krishna who is the main personality. And in other scriptures, in the other Puranas also, it is similar, that even though Krishna is the main personality, but because there are so many other personalities who are being discussed, so people get deviated and they may not clearly understand. And therefore, Narad Muni had to tell Vyasadev to write the Srimad Bhagavatam, where Krishna was the central personality. And Srimad Bhagavatam was all about Krishna and only Krishna. So there's no doubt to anyone who reads the Srimad Bhagavatam that it's about Krishna. But when it comes to the Mahabharata, because it's presented in such a way with so many histories and narrations and so on, and many, many charismatic and powerful personalities, it is not surprising that people may get also carried away or captivated by other personalities. But the fact is, it is Krishna who is the main person there, to be understood through the Mahabharata, and especially through the essence of the Mahabharata, which is the Bhagavad Gita. As we also mentioned, the Mahabharata was compiled by Vyasadev. It takes the form of a conversation between the sage Vaishampayan, who was one of the disciples of Vyasadev, and King Janamejaya. Do you know who King Janamejaya was? Yes, the son of King Parikshit. When King Parikshit was cursed to die in 7 days by the son of Shamik Rishi, whose name was Sringi, then King Parikshit's son, Janamejaya, was enraged. And he understood that when the snake actually came and killed Maharaj Parikshit, he decided to perform a sacrifice in which all the snakes in the world would be killed. Such things were possible in those days. And so before he embarked upon it, there was a great discussion. And at that time, the sage Vaishampayan narrated the history of the Mahabharata to Janamejaya Maharaj. And also there is a secondary sub-conversation going on between Suta Goswami, just like in the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is compiled by Vyasadev. You have Shukadev Goswami speaking. But actually this conversation is narrated by Suta Goswami to the sages. So like that, there are many multiple conversations, similarly in the Mahabharata. The Mahabharata itself says that there are seven major themes to be found in this book. One theme is the wickedness of the Kauravas, as you can expect. Again, expectedly, the second theme is the goodness and the virtue of the Pandavas. The third theme is the wisdom and the presence of mind of Vidura. The fourth is Gandhari's commitment to virtue or dharma. The fifth is Kunti Maharani's tolerance of all the sufferings that she and her sons had to undergo from beginning to end. The next is details of the Kuru dynasty, of the different kings and all the personalities and so on. And the seventh topic is Vasudevasya Mahatmyam, the greatness of Vasudev or Krishna. And this topic is actually, amongst these seven themes, the most important theme of the Mahabharata. So amongst the countless themes that are to be found in the Mahabharata, these seven are the most important. And amongst these seven themes, this one theme about the greatness of Krishna is the most important theme for the discerning reader or the hearer of the Mahabharata. And not for no reason is Krishna's greatness extolled in the different pages of the Mahabharata. Of course, above all, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And this is declared time and time again in the Mahabharata through many of the great personalities there, like Bhishma, like Vidura, like Sanjaya, like Markandeya Rishi, and many, many others on numerous instances, and we'll discuss some of them in the days to come, in the next 3 or 4 days, of how it is very clearly declared that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There is no doubt about it. But even apart from that, Krishna's greatness lies in the way he conducted himself and his wonderful qualities that he exhibited as described in that great text. Actually, his very wise statesman-like qualities, his visionary nature, his commitment to dharma or virtue, his complete determination to ensure that there would be justice and fairness and that things would happen according to virtue and dharma, and that those who were unjustly deprived of their rightful share would be compensated duly. His intelligence, his worldly wisdom along with his spiritual wisdom, he knew how to deal with the cunning ways of the people of this world. Sometimes you see devotees by nature are very simple and they cannot deal with the cunning way in which materialistic people operate in this world. But Krishna, of course, he is a Supreme Lord, but even as a human being, he was quite adept at dealing with all the cunning schemes and plots of many others. And he did all this not for any bad purpose. He did this for the sake of the higher good, for the sake of preserving real dharma, for protecting his devotees and ridding the earth of the demoniac elements. And of course, Krishna also exhibited such wonderful qualities like humility. He became the chariot driver of his devotee. He became their peace messenger. He served his devotees, the Pandavas and many others. So he exhibited all these wonderful qualities. So it is no doubt that Vyasadeva says that the greatness of Krishna is the most important or major theme of the Mahabharata. Now Krishna's mention appears right through the Mahabharata on numerous occasions, but the first time that there is a reference to Krishna is at the Swayamvara ceremony of Draupadi. In the ancient Vedic times, sometimes it was seen that princesses used to marry by this method, Swayamvara. Swayam means self, vara means a bridegroom. So the princess would choose her bridegroom amongst a whole host of prospective candidates who had lined up, all eager to have her hand in marriage, and there would be some kind of a contest of valor and skill. And whichever king or prince emerged victorious would then win the hand of the princess. And so also it was with Draupadi. As Krishna will be saying later on in the Mahabharata, he didn't quite approve of this kind of marriage system. Because then it would mean that the princess didn't really have a choice. It was like a gamble. You never knew who would be the victorious person. And anyone would come along, if he somehow fulfilled that condition, then he would be the one to marry her. So naturally we can understand that Draupadi was quite anxious at this time, wondering who would be the one who would win this contest. So in this Draupadi ceremony, we'll come to that a little later, Krishna makes his first appearance in the Mahabharata. At this time, we can estimate that Krishna's age must have been about 20 years. And Arjuna was 46 days older than him. Roughly, they were of the same age. They were contemporaries. Yudhishthira Maharaj was a little older. Arjuna was somewhat the same age. Bhima was a little older too. But Nakul and Sahadev, the other two Pandava brothers, they were younger than Krishna. So Krishna makes his first appearance at this point at Draupadi's Swayamvara ceremony. But it is not clear from the Mahabharata whether Krishna had met the Pandavas earlier or not. But it seems most likely that he had not met physically the Pandavas. But the fact that he had heard about them and was keeping track of their welfare is clear from the Srimad Bhagavatam. You see, after Krishna left Vrindavan, he came to Mathura. How old was Krishna when he came to Mathura from Vrindavan? He was roughly 11 years old, a little under 11 years old. And then he killed Kamsa, his wicked uncle. And then he placed his grandfather Ugrasen on the throne. And then everything was going on nicely. Shortly after that, in the 10th canto, it is described that Krishna called his uncle Akrura, who was also his great devotee. And he said, "My dear uncle, please, on my behalf, go to Hastinapur, where the Pandavas are residing under the care of King Dhritarashtra. Now, we have heard that the Pandavas, even as young boys, were living in the forest with their two mothers and with their father, King Pandu, had to undergo great trouble because their father, King Pandu, passed away in the forest. And their mother, Kunti, was much anguished. And eventually some sages took the message to King Dhritarashtra and they arranged for Queen Kunti with her five sons to come back to Hastinapur and live in the palace under the protection of King Dhritarashtra. And they are even presently living there now. But we have heard that King Dhritarashtra is weak-minded and he has come under the influence of his evil-minded sons led by Duryodhan. And therefore, our dear friends, the Pandavas, are being discriminated against and there is some injustice going on there. So please determine what the facts of the matter are and come back and tell us. And if necessary, that we can make arrangements to help our dear friends, the Pandavas. So then, Akrura happily goes on to Hastinapur. The Bhagavatam says that he stayed there for a couple of months to actually get a pulse of the whole situation, to understand what was going on. And in those days, life was so much slower, you see. You could go there, live a few months, come back. Not that you had to go super speed, just a couple of days each place. So he stayed there a few months. And in the meanwhile, he met everyone. He met Dhritarashtra, Duryodhan, and the other Kauravas, the Pandavas. He met Bhishma, Drona, Kripacharya, all the leading personalities. He also met Queen Kunti. When he met Vidura poured out his heart of grief, because Vidura knew very well all the cunning schemes and plots that were being hatched by Duryodhan and his brothers, and how Dhritarashtra was actually turning a blind eye to all this. So he mentioned all this to Akrura. And when Akrura sat with Kunti Maharani, she also became very emotional. For one thing, she poured out her heart about the troubles that they were undergoing even in the palace. For those of you who are familiar with the story of the Mahabharata, or at least the outlines, you know that when the Pandavas came from the forest, having been born there, and they returned to Hastinapur, then Duryodhan became very envious of them. Why so? Because the Pandavas, as they were growing up, were in every respect superior to the Kauravas in terms of their influence, in terms of their physical might, in terms of their military skill, in terms of their qualities like their valor, their humility, and so on, and also in terms of how much the subjects of the kingdom loved them. The citizens of Hastinapur, they loved the Pandavas, but they didn't like the Kauravas so much because they knew the Kauravas were not straightforward, they were cunning. Whereas the Pandavas were known to be very virtuous and upright. So this caused great resentment in the heart of Duryodhan and his brothers. You see, this is a great stumbling block in the life of the world. Usually, many good things can happen, but envy amongst people and efforts to pull each other down in this world actually causes great havoc and harm. Otherwise, a human society can live so happily in the service of the Supreme Lord. But for this tendency to harm others, pull each other down, and to forcefully want to take a superior position. So Duryodhan is the typical example of the materialistic consciousness. He was constantly arrogant, he was jealous, he was envious of the Pandavas, constantly scheming and plotting against them, evil-minded. He wouldn't listen to any good word of advice. He was full of anger. And on the other hand, the Pandavas were examples, ideal examples of virtue. So even from their childhood, Duryodhana nursed such a grievance against them that he actually tried to poison Bhima, and there were many, many other things that went on. And Kunti Maharani and their well-wisher Vidura were also very aggrieved about all this. So Kunti Maharani actually poured her heart out to Akrura. And then she started remembering the home of her father, because she also came from Mathura, isn't it? Akrura had come from Mathura, and that was also the place of her father. Before she got married, she was there. because she was a brother of Vasudev. And Vasudev was there in Mathura. So she began to ask, just like a lady, when she sees somebody coming from her parents' house, she will ask, okay, how are my parents, how are my brothers and sisters, and this one and that one. They make inquiries. So Kunti Maharani was making inquiries. How are my parents, and how are my dear brothers and sisters? And they started making inquiries. And then she started making inquiries about Krishna. And how is dear Krishna, my dear nephew, who is the Supreme Lord? She states it clearly here. Who is Bhakta Vatsala? Who is Bhagavan? How is he? Does he remember us? And does he remember and know that we are undergoing so many tribulations in our life? And will he come along with the lotus-eyed Balaram to console us in our moments of persecution and grief? Will he come and give us words of solace? In this way she spoke. And as she was addressing Akrura, she broke out into prayer, glorifying Krishna. Now please remember, this is way early on. In the 8th chapter of the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, we hear the famous prayers of Queen Kunti. But that happens much later. That happens when the battle of Kurukshetra is already over, and then the kingdom has been won by Maharaj Yudhishthir. Krishna has stayed with the Pandavas for many months in Hastinapur and Indraprastha, and then he wants to leave back for Dwarka. So those prayers are much later on, and these prayers are so early when soon after, actually, Krishna must have been not more than 13 or 14 years old at that time. And even at this time, Kunti Maharani recognized that Krishna is the Supreme Lord. And so she says here, O Akrura, that does Krishna recognize and realize that I am here like a doe in the midst of wolves? Will he come to rescue us? Will he come to protect us? And then she starts speaking some wonderful verses. Krishna Krishna Mahayogin Vishvatman Vishvabhavana Prapannam Pahi Govinda Shishubhischavasadatim. Krishna, Krishna, O great yogi, O supreme soul and protector of the universe, O Govinda, please protect me, who have surrendered unto you. I and my sons are being overwhelmed by trouble. And then she goes on to say, for persons fearful of death and rebirth, I see no shelter other than your liberating lotus feet, for you are the Supreme Lord. I offer my obeisances unto you, Krishna, the Supreme Pure, the Absolute Truth, and the Super Soul, the Lord of pure devotional service, and the source of all knowledge. I have come to you for shelter. In this way, Kunti Maharani then began to cry in grief, considering her situation. But note that these prayers to Krishna were spoken by Kunti Maharani when Krishna was so young, only 13 or 14 years of age. So even at that time, she very well knew that Krishna was not just an ordinary boy. He was not just her nephew, but he was actually the Supreme Lord playing the role of her nephew. And then Akrura consoled Queen Kunti and told her, don't you remember the extraordinary nature of the birth of your sons? These are not ordinary sons. Arjun's father is who? Dharmaraj. Indra. Yudhishthira's father is Dharmaraj. Bhima's father is Vayu. And Nakula Sahadev, their fathers are the twin Ashwini Kumaras. They're all sons of demigods. They're exceptionally powerful. So don't worry. And Krishna's protection will always be there. So having pacified Queen Kunti, now Akrura went to meet Dhritarashtra and he presented Krishna's message. And in brief, his message was, "My dear king, now that you have assumed the kingship after the death of Pandu, and you are ruling so justly and giving nice shelter to the sons of the Pandus, sons of Pandu, please ensure that you actually take care of them in an equal way. Please ensure that there is no discrimination against them, because if you do discriminate and do injustice against them, then there will be no end to your miseries. Hellish conditions will await you. On the other hand, if you behave impartially towards your sons and the sons of Pandu, then heavenly abodes wait for you," and so on and so forth. So when Dhritarashtra heard the message of Akrura, he said, "My dear Akrura, what you say is perfectly nice. Your words are like nectar. It is very sweet to hear, but unfortunately, they cannot penetrate my heart." Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, the great Acharya, comments that actually Dhritarashtra was actually very proud from within. But just in order to present an external appearance of being nice, he was speaking sweetly, telling Akrura that your words are like nectar and so on. And then he said, "But dear Akrura, the Supreme Lord who has advented in the Yadu dynasty has his plan for the world laid out, and it must unfold. So what he has said will happen." And therefore, in other words, what Dhritarashtra was telling Akrura was that, "I can't help it if there is discrimination against the sons of Pandu. I cannot treat my sons equally, or the sons of Pandu equally, as I do my sons." So he was giving the excuse that everything is already ordained by the Lord's plan. So he also knew that Krishna was the Supreme Lord, because he mentioned at that time that the Supreme Lord who has appeared in the dynasty of the Yadus. So anyway, Akrura went back and he gave the report to Krishna. Krishna noted it carefully for future action. But it goes to show that Krishna expressed his willingness at this time to step out of Brajabhumi. He had left Vrindavan to go to Mathura, but Mathura is still within Brajabhumi. So he has given a hint that the time would come when he would have to leave the boundaries of Braj to perform his functions for which he had incarnated in this world. So having noted that, and then he went on with his other pastimes in Mathura. Meanwhile, Jarasandha attacked, and then he shifted his headquarters and his capital city to Dwarka. And the entire kingdom, including the subjects, were all shifted there miraculously by the mystic power of Krishna. Much later, the fact that Krishna was keeping track of the well-being of the Pandavas is illustrated again in the Srimad Bhagavatam. When Krishna and Balaram both go to Hastinapur, because they hear reports that the Pandavas and Mother Kunti have been burnt to ashes as they went into the house of Lakh. Of course, we all know the story, right? And Duryodhan, on the pretext of sending them out to a nice picnic, he influenced his father Dhritarashtra to convince the Pandavas to go out for a picnic to this place. He had a grand palace built for them, but this palace was built out of inflammable material. And Duryodhan's plot was that when the Pandavas would be residing there and sleeping there at night, then he would have that palace set fire to, and then the Pandavas would perish. That was his idea. So as it happened, it's a long story, we won't go into that, but the Pandavas were informed of this plot by Vidura, who understood. Vidura was very clever. That's why one of the themes of the Mahabharata is Vidura's intelligence and his presence of mind, his wisdom. So he somehow passed on this message to the Pandavas, and he arranged for someone to come and dig a tunnel. And then the Pandavas, along with their mother, they escaped from the tunnel. And when the palace was lit, then everyone assumed that the Pandavas and Mother Kunti had died. So Bhishma, Drona, Kripacharya, Gandhari were stricken with grief. Their grief was genuine. But there were others like Duryodhan and his brothers. They only feigned grief. They pretended to be sorrowful. But actually internally they were very happy at this report. They did not know that actually the Pandavas had escaped. Only Vidura knew. When Krishna and Balaram in Dwarka heard the news or heard the reports, then Krishna knew everything. Krishna knew that actually the Pandavas had escaped, but he pretended as if he didn't know. Krishna does that many times. So even when we are spacing out a little bit in our Krishna consciousness, Krishna pretends he doesn't know. Otherwise, how could we continue with our spacing out? But Krishna knows very well. So anyway, he and Balaram went to Hastinapur, and they also expressed sorrow to the same degree as did these others, like Bhishma and so on. Alas, alas, the Pandavas are no more, and so on and so forth. And then after having expressed their sorrow, then they came back. So this is the second reference, actually. This also happened in between. So there is no reference that Krishna actually met the Pandavas. So from the Srimad Bhagavatam, we can understand that before the incident of Draupadi Swayamvara, he definitely knew about the Pandavas. He was keeping track because he was their genuine well-wisher. But in the Mahabharata, the first mention comes at the Swayamvara ceremony of Draupadi. Now, having escaped from the house of Lakh, the Pandavas, along with Mother Kunti, traveled far and wide through the jungles, and they went to a distant place because Mother Kunti in particular was very fearful of the well-being of her sons. She knew well the evil nature of Dhritarashtra's sons, and she just wanted to go to a distant place and be secure. She feared that if Duryodhan found out that she and her five sons had escaped from this fire, that he would try to kill them in the forest by some devious means. So incognito, the five brothers along with their mother, they went to different places and eventually came to a place called Ekachakra. Does the place sound familiar?
Yes.
What is it famous for? Nityananda Prabhu's appearance place. And also it is at this place that Bhima killed the big demon, Bakasur. This is not the same Bakasur killed by Krishna in Vrindavan. This is another Bakasur. So anyway, after having done all these pastimes and they were wandering in different places, they came to another place and they were staying at the home of a potter. And somehow they were dressed as Brahmins, actually, the Pandavas, because they were in disguise. And they had been wandering for quite a long time in the forest and going from village to village incognito. So one time when they were disguised as Brahmanas, some other Brahmanas were going somewhere. And they happened to strike up a conversation. And then they were told that these Brahmanas were going to the kingdom of King Drupad, because he had organized a grand Swayamvara ceremony to select a bridegroom for his daughter Draupadi. And Draupadi was reputed to be one of the most beautiful princesses. And naturally, all the princes and kings from far and near had assembled there. And there would be a great test of valor And the Brahmanas were also going there to witness this grand function. So they invited these five so-called Brahmanas to come along also, because they had dressed like Brahmanas. And the other Brahmanas saw that they are so well built, because they were Kshatriyas actually. He said, well, you also come and let's participate in the festival. So they all went there. And Kunti Maharani remained behind at home, because she felt that if I go along with these five, then the secret may be revealed that they are the Pandavas. So then they all went ahead, and there was a huge arrangement there. King Drupad had practically made a stadium, just like you have these football stadiums and cricket stadia and so on. So Drupad Maharaj had arranged for the wedding selection of his daughter a grand stadium like this. Hundreds and thousands of princes and kings had come, and each one was boasting after looking at Draupadi. They were so attracted by her beauty that they all felt that she must become my queen. And they were all boasting to each other that, just see, I will be the one to succeed, and I will make her my queen. And this talk was going on, and Drupad Maharaj overheard, and he was thinking, oh no, not any of these people. They're just so vainly proud and boastful and arrogant, but they don't have the capacity. They're not qualified to marry my daughter. And long ago, a great sage called Yaja had made a prediction that Arjuna would marry Draupadi. So Drupada was thinking that, how do I ensure this? I don't know where is Arjuna. So how will this come about? Therefore, King Drupad had organized a contest that was so stiff that he felt that only Arjuna could do it. Therefore, he had made this contest. What was the contest? Yes, there was a pole, and up on the top of the pole there was a fish, and the fish was moving, rotating, and you had to look into the water, see the reflection of the fish, and then strike the fish in the eye. Right? Strike the fish. And you couldn't look up, you had to look down into the water. And what's more, you had to shoot with a bow that was really very heavy. So most of the kings who came there couldn't even lift the bow, and they had to retreat in disgrace. And then there were others like Jarasandha, who were also very powerful. They somehow managed to lift it, but when they tried to bend it, the bow recoiled in such a way that they were thrown back, and they fell on their backs, and everyone started laughing. And many others came up, and all of them were thrown back like this. And everyone was looking. When Karna came up, right in the beginning, Draupadi said, no, I exercise my right of veto, because he is the son of a charioteer, and I cannot marry anyone who is lower than a kshatriya. So then Karna had to retreat. And meanwhile, all these other kings were coming. Even Duryodhana came. Duryodhana lifted the bow. He was able to string it. He was very strong. He strung the bow. He lifted it. And he shot his arrow. But it missed the target by a hair's breadth. And Draupadi heaved a sigh of relief. And Duryodhan retreated with great anger. He threw the bow down. He was very upset, very annoyed. And then he went back. Now it's interesting that Krishna, Balaram, and the other Yadu chieftains had also come for this Swayambara. Now why would Krishna come? Krishna didn't want to marry Draupadi. Actually, Krishna had already declared, and later also he declared many times, that Draupadi was like his sister. Incidentally, do you know what is a rasa in which Draupadi loves Krishna? Which of the five main rasas? Shanta? No. Sakya? It's a kind of a Sakya and Dasya mixed. Yes. So she had this friendly thing because she considered Krishna to be her brother. So naturally, Krishna had no such intention. Neither did the other Yadu chieftains. So why did Krishna come then to the place of the Swayamvara? The only explanation is that he wanted to meet the Pandavas because he had so far not met them physically. He wanted to see for himself whether they were all right. He wanted to establish contact with them, and especially with Arjuna, because they had many, many more things to do, joint ventures to perform for future. So he wanted that to happen, and also he wanted to express his support to the Pandavas, that I am with you, do not fear. So Krishna and Balaram and the other Yadu chieftains were sitting in the stadium at the different seats allotted to the respective kings. And they were just watching with some amusement. And at one time, many days went by like this. And in one particular day, then Krishna noticed the five Pandavas. And he said, these have to be the Pandavas. Yes. And then he whispered to Balaram, just see those five. They are dressed as Brahmanas, but it seems to me that they are Yudhishthir and his brothers. And Balaram looked and said, yes, no doubt about it. They are the five Pandavas. So this was the first time, at least in the Mahabharata, that Krishna and Balaram actually see the Pandavas. Now the Pandavas have not seen Krishna yet, because it was a huge crowd. So then when Duryodhan failed and everyone else had failed, Dhrishtadyumna, the brother of Draupadi, the son of Drupada, who had actually been the master of ceremonies for this function, he again stood up and said, so everyone has failed. Is there not any one person who can be valorous enough to win the hand of my sister? And as he said, anyone else? Last and final call? And then Arjuna was there. And Arjuna stood up. He was, of course, dressed as a Brahmin. And as he stood up, then all the Brahmins became very excited. Yes, yes. And they all started waving that their top cloth. And they waved it around. Yes, yes, go on. And they were encouraging him. Go on. Just like you have sports competitions, people encourage members of their team. So all these Kshatriyas have failed. And so at least our Brahmana should go and wed Draupadi. Because that was permitted. It was called an Anulom marriage. Anulom marriage means that the man can marry a woman of the same varna or a lower varna. So that's an Anulom or of acceptable marriage. So a Brahmana marrying a Kshatriya lady was acceptable. Or a Kshatriya marrying a Kshatriya lady was also fine. So the Brahmanas were very excited about it, but there were some Brahmanas who said, no, no, no. When all these big, powerful kings have failed, well, how can our Brahmanas who are not trained in the art of warfare do any better? In fact, it will bring humiliation to the Brahmana community. So better not to try and keep away. But the other faction of the Brahmanas prevailed. And they said, no, 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 go ahead, go ahead. We are with you. So then Arjuna walked up and he offered his respects to King Drupad. King Drupad nodded back, still not sure who this regal person was. He was dressed like a Brahmana, but didn't look like a Brahmana. But nevertheless, Drupad wasn't sure, so he said, all right, yes, go ahead. And Arjuna quietly went up. He circumambulated the great bow. And then after offering respects to it, he effortlessly lifted it, strung it, and then held it up, looked into the water, steadied his aim, shot the arrow, and it was bang on target. And there was a tumultuous uproar amongst the Brahmanas. And they were overjoyed. Yes, yes, our Brahmana has done it. He will now have the beautiful Draupadi as his wife. And at that time, Drupad was also happy. Well, his contest was won, he wasn't quite sure who this person was. But nevertheless, what to do? And Drupad accepted that. When he accepted this, the other kings who had assembled there became infuriated. They said, how is this possible? This king Drupad has called us here to humiliate us and insult us. Otherwise, how can he give away in the presence of so many brave kings his daughter's hand to a mere Brahmin? So they became outraged. So they all started talking amongst themselves. And then Drupad in the meanwhile had told his army, he told his ministers, better get the army ready, looks like we have some trouble here. And the army was getting ready. But all these kings in the meanwhile, they were getting really worked up. And they were working each other up also. And they said, how can King Drupad do this? So they all started taking their weapons out of their sheaths and they all started advancing towards King Drupad. As Arjuna was leading Draupadi out of the stadium and the Pandavas were following. But then Yudhishthir Maharaj looked around and saw that his father-in-law, new father-in-law, was in trouble. And Drupad was becoming a little alarmed now because from all directions, all the kings were approaching menacingly towards him. So what to do, even though he had his armies, but here there was a host of kings, everyone angry. And then Yudhishthir Maharaj signaled to Arjuna and Bhima to do the needful. So then Arjuna and Bhima both came up. Now Krishna was watching all this very quietly. And he didn't do anything. Neither did Balaram. So Krishna, Balaram and the Yadus were observing the whole situation. And Arjuna and Krishna Bhima, they went up and stood in front of King Drupada, in between him and the kings who were approaching. And at that time, Karna came forward and many of the kings started shooting arrows. And then Arjuna had his bow and arrow, which was supplied by the soldiers of King Drupad. And he started combating all the warriors. And before even a short time elapsed, they were all vanquished. And then Karna came up. And Karna started shooting arrows. And every arrow was countered by Arjuna. And Karna was really perplexed. Who is this Brahmana? What kind of Brahmana is this? That he can even counter my arrows. I have never heard of anyone like this. And then as the fighting went on and Karna found himself helpless to penetrate Arjuna's defense, he started thinking, well, maybe the Brahma Teja, the power of the Brahmanas, is actually more than the Kshatriyas. He remembered the incident of Vasishtha Muni and Vishwamitra Muni. When Vishwamitra Muni was a king, and he had come to the ashram of Vasishtha Muni and wanted to steal forcefully the Kamadhenu cow, the wish-fulfilling cow that Vasishtha Muni had. And simply by his desire, by his humming sound, the humkar, it's called, just by saying Vasishtha was able to destroy hordes of the soldiers of Vishwamitra. And Vishwamitra then said, what is the use of all my kingship? You know, a Brahmana just by saying, is able to kill all my soldiers. So better I also become a Brahmin. And then he performed austerities for a long, long time. And of course, that's another big story in itself. So he remembered that incident. He also remembered the incident of Parashuram, who was a Brahmana, but he played the role of a Kshatriya to defeat and teach a lesson to the erring Kshatriyas. So Karna was thinking, maybe there's some kind of Brahma Tej here applying. So I better hold on for some time, better stop the battle. But then the other kings were now getting really worked up and they were saying, yes, we must fight and so on. And sometimes there was some difference of opinion. Some said, if he's a Brahmana, then well, we shouldn't. A Kshatriya shouldn't attack a Brahmana. And then some said, well, but if a Brahmana picks up arms against a Kshatriya, then there is no harm in fighting against a Brahmana. And others said, on the contrary, if he is not a Brahmana, then we should teach him a lesson, we should fight against him. So all this talk was going on and things were not looking too good. You know, it's not one of the best things to have at your wedding ceremony. When you have a massacre and you have hundreds of people killed. It used to happen, actually. The Kshatriyas, that's the way the Kshatriyas lived. Sometimes they would lift off the princess and go away, and there would be fierce fighting and people would be killed and so on. So, at this time, Krishna intervened. Krishna came up, and diplomat and statesman that he was, he spoke so sweetly to everyone, and he said, "My dear kings, just see, this contest was very fairly won by this Brahmana. So you can't deprive him of this. You have to be on the side of virtue. What will the world say about you?" So, and in this way he pacified everyone. And then the kings somehow, maybe they felt it convenient also. They retreated. And meanwhile, Arjuna and Bhima left. Because they were also doubting that who are these two? Because as Arjuna was fighting with Karna, Bhima was contending with Shalya. Shalya was the brother of Madri. Madri was the mother of Nakul and Sahadev. So he was like his uncle. But that was what Kshatriyas are all about. So anyway, when Shalya came forward, Bhima had uprooted a big sal tree. You know, because he didn't have any weapons, so trees were good enough for him. And a sal tree, as you know, is a huge tree. It's not a small thing. It's not like a small banana tree or something. It's a huge thing. And at that time, Krishna looked at Balaram and said, "This confirms it. This is Bhima, the one who was lifting the sal tree, who has broken the sal tree and lifted it. And that one who's fighting with Karna has to be Arjuna." And Balaram also agreed, "Yes, now there is no doubt about it." And in the meanwhile, the kings were talking amongst themselves. They were saying, "Who is this that can stand up to Karna? There are only two people who can do that. One is Drona and the other is Arjuna. So it's mysterious that this person, Brahmana, is fighting against him. And who can stand up to Shalya like this? Either only Balaram or Bhima. So what is this Brahmana doing here? And against Duryodhana, it's only Krishna who can stand up to him." So there was so much of confusion in the ranks of the Kshatriyas. And finally, anyway, Krishna settled the whole thing very nicely, peacefully. And in the meanwhile, Arjuna and his brothers quickly escorted Draupadi out, and they went out of the stadium, and Drupad Maharaj was left standing. His daughter is gone. Finished. Where is she gone? Who are the husbands? What is their name? He didn't know anything. Yes? So, he had given his daughter in a fairly won contest that had been set up by him, and now his son-in-law had disappeared with his daughter, and he couldn't stop them because he had arranged it. And so they went away back to the potter's house where they were staying. And at that time, Draupadi was with them, and Arjuna entered the house first because Kunti Maharani, as I mentioned, had not left the home. And from outside, Arjuna announced, "Mother, we are back. We have got some very precious arms." ALMS, not ARMS. Some bhiksha. "We have got some very nice bhiksha. So please come and see." So she was busy inside. So she said, "Arjuna, whatever it is that you have, share equally amongst all your brothers." And then when she realized that it was the princess who had been won, then she was in a great dilemma. "Oh, what have I said, and what can happen now?" So this is something very, very strange, a very peculiar situation. Now she has spoken something. She was such a strict adherent of dharma. Once she had spoken something, how could she take back her words? On the other hand, this was something very unusual. Polygamy of the Kshatriyas and Brahmanas, marrying more than one wife, was an established practice in those days. But the reverse was very strange, polyandry. And that time there was a discussion, and Yudhishthir Maharaj was there, and they were talking. Vyasadeva came, And then he said, yes, there were also such instances. There was a lady called Jatila who married many sages, 10 sages. Then there was the Prachetas, the brothers who married one girl who was the daughter of one of the demigods like that, of the trees actually, Marisha. So they cited instances, and anyway then Kunti agreed, the whole thing was settled up. And at this time, Krishna and Balaram had secretly followed the Pandavas because they wanted to know where they were living and they wanted to introduce themselves. So when all this was going on inside, the discussion was going inside the cottage, the potter came and announced that you have two guests here. And the guests were invited in, the guests came, and Krishna said, I am Krishna and this is Balaram. And then the Pandavas were overjoyed. This was the first time, as far as the Mahabharata is concerned, that the Pandavas met with Krishna and Balaram. Yudhishthir Maharaj was overjoyed. And then Krishna went up to Yudhishthir Maharaj and Bhima. Actually, Yudhishthir Maharaj had touched his feet. Also for Bhima, because Bhima was older, he embraced Arjuna. And then Sahadev and Nakul came and touched Krishna's feet and also Balaram's feet. And then there was a happy union there. Krishna Balaram met them and there was a nice conversation. And they said, how are you and how is everything? I've come here to just express my solidarity with you. Krishna says, I must leave very soon because I don't want you exposed because you are living here incognito. But I've come here to tell you and inquire about your welfare and tell you that I am supporting you, I am with you. And after expressing his words of support, which the Pandavas were overjoyed to hear, and so was Kunti Maharani, then Krishna and Balaram departed from there. Now there was another person who had also secretly followed the Pandavas, and that was Dhrishtadyumna, the brother of Draupadi, because he wanted to find out the identity of his brother-in-law. Who is my sister got married to? And he was hiding behind the bushes. And then he saw Krishna Balaram walking out and he was amazed. He said, what are Krishna Balaram doing here? But he was still hiding. So then the two went away, Krishna Balaram, and then Dhrishtadyumna entered. And then he introduced himself. Of course, they knew who he was. And then eventually he came to understand who they were. And then Dhrishtadyumna went back to his father, King Drupada, who was anxiously waiting for some news. And then he gave this news to them that actually they are the five Pandavas. And Drupada was beside himself with joy. You see, marriages amongst the kings, families used to take place also to set up political alliances. It was also political moves. Because if you married the daughter of a particular king, then you could be assured of that king's friendship with you. So in that sense, Drupada Maharaj was also happy that he had now established an alliance with the Pandavas. And the Pandavas also were in need of such an alliance because they were out on the street, so to speak. So when Drupada became their father-in-law, then the Pandavas were boosted in confidence. And Krishna's words of assurance were also there. So now the Pandavas actually revealed themselves. And then Drupada Maharaj, of course, it took a while for him to digest the fact that his daughter would have five husbands. And he needed a lot of convincing, and finally Vyasadev had to come and settle the matter and okay the whole thing. And that's how it happened. But do you know the story of how Draupadi got these five husbands? Why she got? Yes, in her previous life. Actually, it's a long story. It's almost 9 o'clock. Maybe I'll tell it tomorrow. So we'll talk about it tomorrow. And we'll continue the interactions of Krishna with the Pandavas and how Krishna's story unfolds in the Mahabharata. And as the next 3 or 4 days go on, we'll be hearing many other pastimes about Krishna. And now we will have the arati and some kirtan. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.